It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 106 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week you're in for a real treat because I have a fun conversation with Michael Oeming, creator of such good things as The Victories, Powers, and Mice Templar, among other good things. We talk a lot about the industry, as well as his creations and how things are doing. We talk about Powers and what the movie is up to these days. And so there's a lot of good information that you'll pick up from this interview. I'm sure you'll enjoy it. Then I have this week's preview, a 5 out of 5. For the Fox. And finally, news and previews happens. As always, there's tons to get to, so let's get on with the show. Okay, I want to welcome to the podcast Michael Oeming, creator of such great things as The Victories and Powers and Mice Templar, among other great things. How are you doing today, Mike?
Doing good, man. Thanks so much for having me on, Wayne. I really appreciate it.
It's good to talk with you because I'm such a big fan of your work and I enjoy all the stuff that you do. Why don't we go ahead and start out with The Victories, which is doing pretty well in Dark Horse as far as I can tell. Is The Victories ongoing now or is that still a miniseries?
It's ongoing. The first arc of it was a miniseries, which concentrated largely on this one character, Faustus. And while I was doing that miniseries, I was planting seeds if we got to do a larger story, which would center... Well, not so much center on the other characters, but get to showcase the other characters as well. The very first arc of the original series, original miniseries, is very centered on Faustus. But then the new ongoing series, which starts with Transhuman, it gets to see a lot more of all of the other characters and the world that I started to set up in the first miniseries. Mm-hmm.
What's interesting to me is that because this Transhuman was a storyline, I kind of thought this was another miniseries coming along.
Yeah, so I'm glad to hear it. It's tricky to market that kind of stuff. Like, I mean, people like to kind of know the length of a story, but then also by doing that, you know, it can leave the impression that it's a miniseries, especially because the first series was a miniseries. So, yeah, I can totally understand people's confusion, but hopefully they'll notice, like, in my hands, my editor, Scott Alley at Dark Horse Lives, just down the street from me, so every now and then he'll drop off the latest issues. So this latest issue is issue 6. So by 6 and 7, people should sink in really well that it's not a miniseries anymore.
Okay, that'll be good because I'd like people to know that because Victories is kind of an adult Justice League is what I like about it. It does – you still – you know, you throw some of the words that you don't never – you'll never hear them in Justice League. But it's kind of fun to see that.
Shenanigans, it's, words like that.
Yeah. But you've also got more adult and I think more interesting stories, like more relatable to real life. Mm. As to what's going on, which I really like. I read an interview with you once, and you talked about the fact that you wanted to introduce real life more instead of just punch fests to have something that was a little more human and a little more relatable.
Yeah, I mean, I think the book is more adult, but I don't think it's adult in the typical sense of just, you know, cursing and some nudity. But, you know, we just deal with more adult things. You know, younger people don't really worry too much about these sort of lifelong hang-ups that happen to you as you get older, you know, like whether it's anxiety or body issues or addiction and alcoholism. Those are all big parts of the Victories. So that's what I like to think of as adults, as opposed to, you know, just naked stuff and guts falling out. Yeah.
Well, I mean, adult in a good way.
Yeah.
Not in the stores you go into that you have to wear a raincoat and stuff like that.
Those are good too. I mean, there's a time and place for everything. You know, there's yeah. a time and place for Archie comics. There's a time and a place for, you know, stuff like the Victories.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like it, and I like the take to it. I have to admit, as a Batman fan, Faustus is the one that appeals to me the most.
Yeah, he was not my, you know, even though these are kind of visually iconic characters, he was not my take on Batman. Some of the other characters are sort of like Metatron kind of is. I mean, they start out as these kind of iconic characters to make larger comments on them, not as deeply as we do in Powers, but... you know, it's kind of give the viewer, the reader, a head start as they're reading the comic. But, you know, Faust is definitely sort of an amalgamation between characters like, well, they're very different, but, you know, it's that kind of cross between Batman and Spider-Man, you know, visually and kind of on the surface of his character. But they're definitely not one or the other.
Right. Right. I enjoy that. I like mixes of characters, and I like to see different kinds of things. So for me, I'm a big believer in variety, and when I get to read your books, there's always something new. I haven't seen this stuff before, and I really like that because, you know, I have read certain stories. I'm getting to the place now where I can start to count in hundreds where some of the stories I've read. And your books don't do that, and I really like that about them, especially the Victories. It's very much – it almost has a very dark feel, and yet there's a lot of adventure and things to that. And so I really like the mix that you're providing in that book.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I'm not trying to in any way jettison, the foundation of superhero comics with this, you know. So it is definitely still a superhero book, and you got guys and girls in tights beating each other up and, you know, going on weird adventures and things explode and stuff like that. So I want all that stuff. I love all that stuff. But I just do think that we need I would like to see more of just a variation of the kind of things that we do. I mean, a lot of superhero books, even really, really well done superhero books, are very soap opera like, which I don't have a problem with, but the problem with soap operas is the problem with soap operas is you can't just pick one up. I mean, you have to get into it week after week to begin to understand what's happening. So a lot of times the mainstream superhero books I'll pick up, and I can tell it's well written and it's beautifully drawn, but there's a billion characters on one page and I can't tell what's going on. And I'll pick up the second issue of that and I still can't tell what's going on. And I pick up the third issue of it, and I start to figure out what's going on, but then I'm thrown for a loop by this other subplot that came out at a, you know, wherever that was built on before. So I want something that people can, you know, relate to. And it's hard to relate to comics. It's hard to relate to superhero comics unless you're, you know, indoctrinated into that world already.
Well, you're not the only one that finds this confusing, because I noticed in more and more books, and especially in Marvel, I keep seeing these previously in summaries at the beginning so people can know what in the heck happened.
It's a good idea, because they are aware of that. You know, they're not blind to that fact, and they want to be able to, you know, embrace new readers and stuff. It's not, you know, from the outside, sometimes we could say, oh, it's so insulated, they don't know what they're doing, blah, blah, blah. They totally know what they're doing. And they're very conscious of the fact that it's hard for new people to hop on to X-Men or something. Of the new mainstream books, Brian Bendis's All New X-Men, I've really been enjoying, because it is a kind of a start over, you know, and it goes back and grabs some of the old classic characters and stuff. So for me, that's been really great. But every time there's a plot or character that, you know, depends on stuff that happened and, you know, in the mainstream Marvel universe, I kind of gloss over because I'm lost on it. And it would take me to be a reader of like a year to really to understand all that and embrace that whole world. And it's just a little tough.
Well, I always say that you have to read 30 years of X-Men to understand what's going on, because every once in a while they'll pull this character out that we haven't seen in like two decades.
Yeah, which is pretty cool. And really, that's no different than when I was a kid. I mean, when I first started reading X-Men and even Spider-Man, well, not so much Spider-Man because it was such a smaller world. It's a lot easier. But I remember reading X-Men and New Mutants, and you know, things I'm complaining about are no different than it was then. It was just as hard to pick up an issue of New Mutants and, you know, first get a grasp on these characters and everything going on around them. You know, that's just part of the convention of the series. And when I did Victories, it wasn't so much to set out to not do that. And I'm sure if Victories is around for 15, 20 years, that will be a problem. But I don't know what I'm saying.
Well, that's where the Ultimate line came from. And now they're struggling with the Ultimate line and stuff. The problem always is in comics is that what do you do with trade people who buy six-issue things? And if you're – some of us go habitually every week, and the comics industry has to appeal to as many people as possible. Mm. And so what you're doing, I think, is a good thing. You're telling stories, but you don't necessarily have to do one-issue stories. But I imagine as a writer, you're going to eventually come around and do like a single-issue tale.
Yeah.
Based on a character or things like that, because it's good to vary that kind of system up.
Yeah, we started doing some backup stories in the Victories. The next issue 6 that comes out, has our first backup story. And it's a self-contained story. It's drawn by Victor Santos, Mice Templar, and I wrote it specifically for him. And it focuses on the Sleeper character, so we get to see a little bit about like what's the deal with him and his old magic cat thing and stuff. So we get to do more of that with the characters as we go along, and in the future it would be really cool to do some standalone stories. But right now a lot of them are revolving around sort of larger plot about the conspiracy stuff. But it's pretty easy to follow that because it's pretty linear. You know, there's not too much twists and turns in that end of the plot because again, I wanted to keep it easy enough to follow because it's about the characters and not so much about, you know, plot twists.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to say, I find it easy to follow. And I also wanted to say, I mentioned this before we started recording, is that I find your art so dynamic. And I think because you think visually, you're also a great writer because things move along at a great pace. We don't get huge bubbles with words in them covering whole pages and stuff, which some people like to do. I always like the action and the visual aspect of comics. And I think because you're an artist, you understand the reader more. We're looking at this visually, and eventually you got to do a little info dump, but you know, not all the time.
Yeah.
And I just think it's such a great thing. I just love how dynamic your art is.
I have a general rule, and this is one of the fun things about drawing the story that I'm writing is as I'm drawing it or laying it out. Usually in the laying out stage, I can tell it's gotten too stagnant in a certain spot, and go like, oh, you know, I've got like 3 pages of people talking on here. Can I turn this into an action scene, or not necessarily an action scene, but can the characters be proactive during the scene? Mm-hmm. It's one thing to have people talk about their emotions and who they are or whatever. And there's another thing to have that happen while there's a visual story being told, a visual dynamic. I do like people sitting around in a room and talking. But it's more interesting to have them talking and loading up guns or talking and, you know, dealing with a cat going crazy in the room at the same time or biting a robot while they're talking about their personal problems. And when it comes to the art end of it, I'm always struggling to be more dynamic. I have a tendency to tell my stories very straightforward, almost like a play where things are moving more left to right than they are, you know, forward and back. So I'm always trying to push that harder because, you know, look at amazing artists. Obviously, Jack Kirby is kind of the king of that sort of in-your-face stuff. And I see all these other great artists doing amazing angles and shots and varying perspectives that make it much more dynamic. And I'm always struggling to just work harder at that. And I've been doing this for 20 years, and I'm still trying. It feels like I'm still learning.
Well, you know, your art reminds me of Bruce Timm on Batman the Animated Series.
Yeah, Bruce Timm was a huge influence on my work. Bruce Timm and Mike Mignola and Alex Toth, those two are probably the strongest, most consistent influences on my work. The Bruce Timm thing happened out of, before I got interested in that sort of work, I was doing very line-oriented stuff. It was very detailed-oriented, and I was very influenced by Art Adams, Michael Golden, and those kinds. And there was a period in my life after my son was born, and to bring steady money in, I had to get like a regular job, which is really tough to balance that with drawing comics full time when I was drawing this, you know, really, really detailed style. So I was looking over my work and I had done some samples for Batman Adventures. And as I was looking at it, it kind of clicked to me like, oh, wow, this stuff that Bruce is doing really falls in line with Alex Toth's work, who I really, really loved. And I started to see that simple, cartoony, iconic kind of thing. And just a much more clear voice suddenly. And that also opened me up, oddly enough, to guys like John Buscema, whose work I'd always appreciated, but I'd never fully understood until, again, looking at it through a sort of Bruce Timm Alex Toth spectrum, seeing the simplicity of his figure work and his rendering and the contour lines and his composition in a panel, like all that started to come through. So that was one of the big reasons for kind of switching styles. Part of it was economy, both financially and time-wise. Mm-hmm. And it was just some growth. So it's kind of an example of how a bad thing being, you know, having to get a regular full-time job or part-time job or whatever, you know, pulling me away from comics was actually a very good thing because it helped me redefine myself and the way I think about my work. And then obviously it helped my career out a lot. Like that's when things really took off with Powers and Hammer of the Gods and that kind of stuff.
Now, there's a lot of stuff that you've done. Now, to wrap up Victories, as far as you're getting issue number 6, so we're doing well, and we expect this to go for hopefully a long time.
Yeah, thank you. Like,
because, man, I it's such a wonderful book, and I give it to everybody I can trying to get them to read it because it's such a nice twist on how things go in other comic companies, and I like something different. So, I hope it lasts a long time.
Dark Horse is doing, Nate, they're reaching out into more of the superhero universe. But they're also, while they're looking to grab a lot of that, they're also maintaining their integrity as a company and wanting to tell superheroes in a different light. So Victories isn't necessarily indicative of the type of books they're doing, but I think it's a good idea that they really are looking to do something different. Mm-hmm.
Now, I've got to ask you, though, because a lot of comic companies steer away from superheroes. You've got DC and Marvel, and they sort of have they've wrapped that all kind of up, and everybody looks at it and says, well, we can't do superheroes because DC and Marvel has it. Did that kind of intimidate you when you started Victories, or was that a challenge to you? How did you, when you started making Victories happen in your head, were you looking forward to it, or was it something that worried you a little? How did this happen?
It didn't worry me. I guess the only thing I was it sort of did worry me. What worried me was it's a superhero book. So anybody who's not into superheroes or doesn't want to see superheroes from me because they're used to seeing like mythology or Powers, noir stuff, like this doesn't appeal to them. And if you are a superhero fan, when you first look at this isn't your typical book, and it definitely is not a Marvel and DC book, so it won't necessarily appeal to you. So it's that sort of idea that, like, well, who is the audience? Who is the weird superhero audience? the weird, dark superhero stuff, you know? So that worried me a little bit. But, you know, we found our audience. So mm-hmm. I think the idea is you take that stuff into consideration, but you really, really have to just do what makes you happy. And if at that point, that was the type of book that I want to do. So it's really important to go forward with that, not to go ahead and do something like nix the superhero aspect of it and try and, do something else. You do what makes you happy. You measure the risk and reward, and then you go forward.
Mm-hmm. Now, I got to ask you one thing, because you were mentioning this backup story is going to be drawn by someone else. As an artist writer, do you have one that you prefer, or do you prefer to do them both at the same time?
Right now, I'm preferring to do them both at the same time, and I think most of my career and work from now on, I'm going to completely write and draw myself. I really enjoy. I really enjoy teaming up with other writers. I love the working together with somebody else, the collaboration thing. I have a lot of fun with. But there's a freedom in writing and drawing a story for myself that I can't get in just writing for somebody else or just drawing for somebody else. Yeah. So okay. I don't know. I like drawing. I don't know. Drawing is easier than writing for me.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's probably easier for me I think I can draw a book almost as fast as I could write a book.
Oh, wow.
And that's not so much because I'm so fast, but because I really slow down as a writer.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're a visual thinker, I have a feeling. You know, there's some people who don't think visually. They think in text, and I'm a visual thinker too, although that doesn't make me – I'm no good of an artist. I'm anywhere near art. But I think that visual thinkers – often make better comic writers as well as artists.
Yeah, I mean, Brian Bendis, who I've worked with for a long time, was an artist long before he was a writer, you know, and he kind of made that transition into writing, so he always thinks in very visual terms. Mm-hmm. I'm afraid I probably think in too visual of a term because sometimes this is what slows me down a lot is on my scripts, I will write I'll write something out incorrectly, like the grammar's wrong or the spelling is wrong. But in my head, as I'm reading it, it's read correctly because in my mind's eye, it is how I intended it to be. And then, you know, when it's actually on the paper, it, you know, I can't see that I completely wrote, even missing words, you know, like there won't be certain key words in there, like is or not, you know, like an adverb.
Oh, well, that's when a good editor comes in handy.
Yeah, yeah. And that's one of the reasons I've always also liked working with other people. But, you know, my wife, Taki Soma, and some other friends will help me out with scripts because I do have that problem. I think so visually that it's the way I intended it to be in my head.
How does it feel though when you write a story for someone else that are you thinking about their style of art when you're writing it for them like you are for that backup story?
It's not so much the style, but I'm thinking about what they do well or don't do well, you know. Mm-hmm. When I was writing for Victor Santos, I just knew he would do all that superhero stuff really good. I'm not sure what I would think Victor wouldn't do well, because you think he does everything well. But you definitely play to a writer's strengths if you can figure them out and not play to the weaknesses, which is why I never draw like big traffic scenes for myself or too many poor scenes. But thanks to SketchUp, I can now draw traffic scenes a little bit easier.
That's good. That's good. Now, why don't we move into KO? That I was so interested in that book because it came out hardcover and had to do with young girls.
Which book is this?
Didn't you do the hardcover book that came out from Marvel or Icon?
Takeo? Oh,
Takeo, that's how it's pronounced.
Yeah. Sorry,
I need a pronunciation guide for this kind of stuff because, you know, I never know how to pronounce things, but it's Takeo, and I liked the story because it was different, because it had, and again, you had your dynamic style going, so it was easy to watch, but I liked the fact that you actually focused on younger girls. I don't see much of that in comics, and so for me, that was really something different, and I really enjoy that.
Thanks.
Are there any more of them going to be coming out of that?
We're going to do a full collection of the first two volumes. I think our first trade paper, the second trade paperback has to actually come out, and then we'll kind of collect all of it together. I mean, we might do more stories in the future. And it all kind of came out of Olivia, the main character, is Olivia Bendis, Brian Bendis' daughter.
Oh.
Taki is my wife, Taki. When Olivia first met Taki, she just kind of had the girl crush thing. And like they were like, just had this special connection. She always thought of her as like a big sister and stuff. Mm-hmm. And she literally made the story up. And then Brian, you know, added to it and stuff. And then the three of us kind of worked on it together. So it was a big family affair, which is great because we also had other sort of family and extended family members in there. My son makes an appearance, and there's Kelly Sue is one of the main characters in the book. It is pretty much an all-female cast. And one of the females being really young is also kind of unheard of. I don't know of any other main characters, female characters, who are, you know, 10 running around in comics.
Well, it's great fun to read because it's something special. I just was interested that you started out with hardcovers.
Yeah, first one, we just went to try it. Like, what would it be like to just do it just directly to trade? Because, I mean, the industry field is constantly changing, you know, whether it's digital comics or the trade comics and stuff. And we just wanted to see, well, how would this float? What would be the deal with it? And I think ultimately the industry is still strong with individual issues going into trade, and one of the reasons is just because of the time on the shelf. When we released it and everybody talked about it, it was great, but it was really just about a week and a half that it was on people's minds. And one of the great things about the floppies is they come out every month, so that every month people are talking about it up until the release. So it helps keep it fresh on people's minds, as well as the sort of the format questions, because even though I think we released it for only $10, it was still, you know, try something out for $10 versus try something out for $3.99 or $2.99, whatever it is. So that's why we started that way. And then the second miniseries goes to miniseries and then the trade first.
Now, that whole series screams of animated show to me. When I read that, I just feel like this ought to be on like Cartoon Network or Disney XD or one of those. And I just wondered, had you all considered that with those books, or what was up there?
You know, that's something we realized as we're doing it, for sure. It would be great. I mean, so far, I don't think we've been approached by anybody about it.
Oh, nuts.
But it's also a tough market because it would be an action superhero story that stars two girls. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you look at the way cartoons are structured on television, and I don't think it's because of any preconceived ideas of, like, let's only make pony stuff for girls and, you know, action stuff for boys. But, I mean, you can talk to 10-year-old kids. That's kind of what they're like. I mean, they naturally, you know, go in those directions of stuff. And that's why Adventure Time is very boy-oriented, even though it does attract everybody. But, I mean, it's a kid with fucked up teeth with a sword, you know, beating the crap out of stuff and then losing its temper every now and then. That's a boy's story, you know? So, you know, it'd be tricky. Where would Takeo fall like that? Takeo's kind of like, it's kind of like Ben 10, but with girls instead, you know? But, yeah, so maybe that's the thing. I don't know. It's thinking outside of the box isn't always the easiest way to go about selling things.
Yeah.
Plus, we don't do it for the purpose of selling it. You know, we do it because we knew it was a story that we wanted to tell, and then you hope for the best after that.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of television, Powers, a series that probably you're best known for, is you guys had the FX network picked up that back in 2011, right?
Yeah.
We had
film deals with that going back to 2001 or something like that.
Really? Wow.
So, I mean, we've just been in constant development with the show or movie in whatever form it's been. And it is still alive and well. We shot a pilot that we weren't 100% happy with, so we decided to go back to the woodwork with it. And the pilot wasn't bad at all. It was actually good. I think with more work, it could have kept on going, but I think it just hadn't found its real voice yet, hence the last 2 years and more production. Charlie Houston, who's an amazing writer, he's heading up the writing staff now, and he is the main writer on it. He's a fan of Powers, so he's read all the material, all of it, all of the trades, not just like the first one or two. Mm-hmm. He understands the comic book genre. He's written Moon Knight and several other things for Marvel and DC. And he's an accomplished novelist now. So, you know, this is a guy who knows the whole spectrum of the field, which is really important when it comes to taking a mixed genre show, basically a cop show and a superhero show, and then mixing it onto network television. It's a really, really tricky thing to do. And watching the problems in developing over the years has been an interesting, very eye-opening experience of, like, how difficult this actually is to translate onto film and television.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to say, a lot of people I know who get optioned, and I've interviewed several for this podcast, and when the time comes and they actually get started making things, you know, a producer will come in, you know, does Retro Girl actually have to be a girl? Can't that be a man?
Yeah, superhero. Can't she just be a normal person? What if she was a cop instead?
Yeah. That's right. And Christian Walker, why does he have to be so big? Why can't he be kind of small, you know?
Well, one of my experiences, and I would definitely suggest this as a piece of advice to anybody out there who's being optioned for something. If your material, if your work that has been optioned is more than, say you have more than, you know, two story arcs done, you've already done all the thinking on this universe. Changing it at this point is just going to be a mess, and it's going to be confusing and conflicting, and you have to restart. Everybody has to restart brand new rules all over again that they won't fully understand. And that's the thing with Powers, is we were so well developed by our third year that anybody doing anything outside of Powers, it wasn't true to the form, but now I had all kinds of problems by getting away from the original storyline or concept. The further away you got from it, or the more you focused on the wrong things, the more screwed up everything got, because we had such a well-thought-out universe. Mm-hmm. It's different when, say, so I did a book called Six. It was a 48-page one-shot book, and it was optioned by Fox, and they filmed a pilot for it, and the pilot was pretty good. The thing that kind of destroyed it was the writer strike. But what happened was, it was one issue, 48 pages. It was a sketch of an idea. So the pilot for that was way more thought out than the comic was, and it was a deeper, richer world, because I had a starting place to go from. Whereas Powers, or if you have your own project out there that's well developed, it's detrimental to the material to try and change things like that, or try to change focus on the characters. And so what we found over the years is the closer you were to the source material, the better the work was, with Powers anyway.
See, I can't understand. You read this thing, you like it, you option it, and then you change it.
Yeah.
I don't understand that whole process.
Mostly producers see just a shell of what they want, and then they want to, you know, make it into something else because of prior experience with other successes. Mm-hmm. And they're not measuring the success of what this material originally was successful on. They're measuring it against what their last hit was successful on. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why these things happen. And it doesn't just happen to comics. It happens to film all the time, or, mm-hmm. you know, to novels. Mm-hmm. So I think the intentions are always, well, I don't know. The intentions are always about making money. And that's not a criticism. That's, you know, it's mm-hmm. a big business. It has to be. It has to be mm-hmm. success.
Yeah, but, it's called show business for a reason. That's the thing.
Exactly. I don't have any problems with that either. Also, even yeah. if they came up with another version of Powers that was brilliant, and not exactly Powers, I'm still the mindset of this is my comic and this is their film kind of thing. You know, mm-hmm. The source material is always there and it's never touched. It's never sullied by what happened. I mean, look at the Tank Girl movie and look at Tank Girl, the comic. It's, you know, 20 something years later, it's alive and well, the comic is, and it's been mm-hmm. unsullied by the film with anything that's just kind of a cute anecdote to us, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, I hope it comes to pass. I'd still like to see it. And do you have any idea when this might start happening again, or is this?
We just handed in another draft of the script, mm-hmm. and unfortunately, the holidays are coming up, so it might be a little while before, you know, we can announce anything interesting. Other than to say, it's just still alive and well, and we're just doing new drafts. And mm-hmm. I know a bunch of these interviews we've done keep saying, "Oh yeah, we just handed in a new draft." It's not the same new draft. These are new drafts.
Okay.
I think over the last year, there's probably been 4 or 5 drafts. They're not all completely different from each other. They're usually it's like, well, this character motivation or this crime subplot is not clear enough, or that part is overbearing, or this character is now unlikable, or something. And that's because of, you know, Charlie specifically is always pushing the boundaries. He's never happy with what he could do that's enough. He wants to do something better than the last thing he did, or, you know, he doesn't want to do a character you've seen before. He wants to push everything. And so it's a lot of work.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope it happens, because I'd like to see it. I think as long your involvement with it actually makes me happy, because sometimes it just seems to leave the creator behind, and then when I see it, I go, "That's funny." That doesn't look at all like what it was.
Closely attached to this. I mean, Brian, mm-hmm. even for the last version of the pilot, mm-hmm. the first version of the pilot. Let's hope it's not the last. Let's hope it's the first version. we went out to Chicago for the filming, and we were there. We got to discuss things with the characters. And Jason Patrick, as Walker, really threw himself into the role, and so did Lucy Punch as Dina. She did an amazing job becoming a character that, especially physically, she was nothing like Dina. You know, she's a tall, slender girl, and Dina's a short girl and stuff. And well, I think that's just you know, a characteristic that is not that important to the character. Like, so what if she's tall and the character short or whatever? It does matter when, you know, it changes the dynamics between the characters. In the comic, you know, Walker's 6'5" and he's huge, and then Dina's mm-hmm. little girl, yet her personality is so overbearing. It's bigger and stronger than Walker. That's one of the things that makes them interesting. Mm-hmm. So then you take that and you put it on the film, and you have, you know, Dina being the same height or slightly taller even than Walker, that changes everything. Mm-hmm. And then those actors have to really become the part in their own way. And they were doing a really good job at that. It was really interesting and very flattering to see. Mm-hmm. And whoever these new actors are going to be when we cast a new pilot, mm-hmm. They're going to bring their own thing to the characters. But now we're so much closer to the source material than ever before. I think it's only be more important that the characters stand a certain way and they have a mm-hmm. physical relationship that's similar to what's happening in the comics. And it's great to be that close to the material. We're definitely a part of this. Whereas other deals, and I've had several other properties option. It's basically, you know, if I'm lucky, I'll look at the script, but I don't really have that much to say in it. And whereas here, it's like we get the scripts and we make notes, and I'll implement those notes if they make mm-hmm. sense, of course. Mm-hmm. Which always feels good to feel like you've contributed something, you know, that's as awesome as one of Charlie Houston's scripts. Mm-hmm. Even if it's a teeny, teeny, tiny thing.
Well, you're making me even more anxious to see if Power Stone hits the screen. Because as long as you guys have something to do with it, I am just convinced it's going to be great stuff, because Powers has been great stuff as a comic.
I'm convinced, too. I mean, that's the thing. It's been a little frustrating how long it's taken, but at the same time, if we hadn't been pushed this hard and this long in the script, it wouldn't be nearly as good as it is. And it's that thing of, it's been a frustrating ride, but man, the material is just so good now. And so I'm not scared of it going to air. You know, I don't feel like we're going to have to make any apologies or, you know, hope that things improve as it gets on air. Like, it's going to be, when it goes to air, it's going to be, you know, in full sprint. And that's because of all the work we put behind it.
Mm-hmm. Can't wait. Can't wait. Sounds like great fun. Now, how about the comic? How's the comic doing these days?
We're doing good. Powers, the Bureau's been out since beginning in February.
Mm-hmm.
We've done better in past years than getting it out pretty much on a monthly schedule. Mm-hmm. I say pretty much because we haven't been, but we're, you know, for us it's pretty good. I think we got like 8 or 9 issues out this year. Mm-hmm. And that was while we're doing, besides our other projects, Brian also did an issue or two of Takio at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so that's going strong. I forget what issue is coming out now. I think 9 will be coming out soon. We've been having great time on that. I mean,
good.
It's crazy. We've been doing it for 13 years and, you know, it still feels fresh. I still feel like there's a lot of material we haven't touched on or covered. Mm-hmm. So, and artistically, it's always a challenge. I'm still learning and growing and mm-hmm. Pushing myself on it. And Brian and I, you know, we live in the same town now. It's really great to, you know, kind of powwow on this stuff together. Like, you know, I've been co-writing with him for a while and that's been great. It's the discussing stories and then drawing them and having him, you know, remix everything and come up with new dialogue. And we're just having the best of times on it. Mm-hmm. And we also have a secret project that's unannounced yet that will be launching next year, which, if I remember our conversation correctly, we'll just be doing them. We're going to be doing them at the same time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we're not going to be putting Powers down for this other project, but we're excited to do fresh material, too.
Well, you know, good stuff is worth the wait. So, you know, if you guys put out 8 or 9 issues a year, if you're doing what you're happy with, and,
yeah,
you know,
happy. That's the thing. You're going to be happy creators.
Yeah, and for us as readers, we enjoy it. I think we can really pick up that there's a lot of energy involved in it. Even in Powers, this long into it, and I have to say, there's not a lot of books that have lasted 13 years that are still a lot of energy to it. So I have to commend you on that. That's great stuff.
Thanks. It does feel good because, you know, a lot of my favorite creator books either haven't gone this long or if they have, yeah.
Well, that's good stuff. I didn't know you were involved in Mice Templar. That was a surprise to me when I discovered that.
Oh, yeah. No, Brian Glass and I started Mice Templar back in, I think it launched in 2005 or 2006. And we had actually had it around quite longer than that. And I think it first appeared in a charity book down at the Baltimore Comic Con, maybe like 2003 or something, 2004.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd worked on that. We did the first arc together. And after the second arc was when I went to go work for Valve, which is a video game company.
Oh.
And I just didn't have time at that point to continue to do my simpler full time. So that's when we got Victor Santos on board. From that point on, Victor took over the art chores and I still split covers with him. And, you know, Brian and I worked on a story together pretty loosely. And Brian has just been basically running the ship ever since.
Oh, wow. I do want to say one thing, was that I'm a big fan of David Peterson's Mouse Guard.
Yeah.
And at first I was kind of offended because they came out around the same time. I thought, why are they mimicking Mouse Guard? But then Mr. Peterson told me, no, they're not mimicking me. They're doing all kinds of stuff on their own. So I was like, oh, man, I'll have to check this out then.
Yeah, it was kind of the same. We were working on it at the same time separately. You know, I guess it was somewhere in the id and stuff. And, yeah, we get along pretty well with
Peter
and some of the books and stuff.
So. You have the secret project, and I won't press you on it because I don't want to get anybody in trouble. But are there other things that you're working on that we should be knowing about?
Let me see. Taki, my wife Taki and I, we did a series together a couple years ago called Rapture for Dark Horse, which was a superhero tragic love story with an apocalyptic background. And we've been talking about teaming up together on something new as well. So that's something that we'll probably start later on. Well, I guess it's the end of this year, pretty much. So in comic book time, October is pretty much the end of the year. So next year, yeah, we're going to start on another creator-owned thing together.
Oh, cool. So
it's been all like Powers, Mice Templar, The Victories, and the beginnings of this secret project with Brian and I.
Okay, see, now you got me interested. I got to pay attention to the news releases to find out what the secret project is. I'm sure it's going to be great stuff.
Well, luckily with stuff like, you know, Twitter and Tumblr, it's so much easier to keep track of that stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very good. Well, it's good talking with you, Mike, and I wish you continued success because, man, everything has been so much fun that we get to read and enjoy not only your art but your writing. So, man, I just hope you keep it up, and, man, we'll keep buying your product as long as you're making it. So, great stuff.
Great. Thanks a lot, man. I really, really appreciate it. It was a great interview. Thank you.
Examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast, so you can keep reading your comics.
Now at MajorSpoilers.com.
Faster than a speeding bullet. To leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Wayne's Comic Review.
Strange visitor from another planet who came to Earth with powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men, who can change the course of mighty rivers, bend steel in his bare hands. And now, another exciting episode.
I've been kind of mixing my reviews in with the upcoming books or in the news in the last couple of weeks, but this week I really want to point out a very successful book that's just launched, and I think it's worthy of your attention. And that's the Fox number one from Red Circle Comics, which is part of Archie Comics. I had a chance to review it, and I wrote a preview, and it's a very strong book. Kind of fun, resembling the old fun superheroes of the day. Now, the Fox, of course, has been around a time or two before, and he's very much of a Batman-like character, but he's more realistic in the sense that he's not a millionaire, and so he doesn't have a lot of money to solve his problems. When we come along, this is the son of the original Fox, and he's married and he's got a child. He's a photographer, and he has a nasty habit of getting into trouble, and on many levels he reminds me of Peter Parker more than Bruce Wayne. For example, he has trouble with all these women who are bad for him, which Peter Parker is always famous for. He's also got a name with two P's in it. His secret identity is Paul Patton, although he's a junior, and that reminds me very much of Peter Parker. He's also a photojournalist, which Peter Parker has been for many a time. He has many crazy villains, and he does wear a dark costume. Well, Venom actually does that now, but Spidey did wear that for a while. Since he came before Spider-Man, was Mr. Stan Lee actually inspired by the Fox? I guess we'll never know, but I would say check out this original character. Now, Mark Waid does an excellent job with the script. He's working with Dan Haspiel's plot and his art, and lots of good things are going on with it. It's an adventure comic that's full of action and surprises, as well as a terrific blend of word and heart that leaps off the page and into our imagination. The Fox is off to a powerful start for both kids and adults. So I can't wait for issue number 2. I have to give 5 out of 5 stars to the Fox number 1. And by the way, it is sold out. I'm sure more will be coming around, but you can probably buy the digital version online. So please be sure to catch the Fox. I always like Mark Waid's stuff, and hope you will too. It's time for the latest news. I hope everybody had a nice spooky Halloween. A lot of stores in the last week or so have been having this Comic Fest, which is kind of a spinoff of the first Saturday in May when we give out free comic books on Free Comic Book Day. From what I understand, it went pretty well. More and more people are doing it as the years go on. I think last year was the first year, and this year was the second. So we'll see if more of them pick that up. But apparently it went pretty well, at least in the area where I'm from, around the Washington, D.C. area. Related to that is a very interesting little news story that made me kind of laugh. A school actually banned superhero costumes for Halloween. And it reads this way. It says, an American primary school banned its pupils from dressing up as their favorite superheroes for Halloween to stop the outfits from scaring younger children. The elementary school warned parents about the dangers of their children impersonating Batman, Superman, Wolverine, Spider-Man, and many others. And they also extended the ban to the Power Rangers and Ninja Turtles for good measure. I find that kind of interesting. You know, we're so terrified that somebody's actually going to be scared that we can't do that. But to be honest, they also banned witches, ghosts, monsters, or anything that might be scared to a young child. So what in the world did they get to dress up as? So I'm not sure. They don't say what they did, but basically it was something that couldn't be scary, which is exactly what Halloween's all about. So I don't know. I'm kind of fascinated by this whole business, and I have to think that probably went over with a big flat blug. Because if you can't have action heroes and you can't have anything that's at least slightly scaring, I don't see how that went out very well. But that's what they did. Speaking of Superman and Batman, the film has begun shooting, and they're doing some early scenes at Kent Farm. They say the official shooting doesn't start for a couple more months, but there's a very busy pre-production period going on. They've already filmed the football scene, and now websites report that they've descended on Yorkville, Illinois, where the Kent Farm scenes were filmed for Man of Steel. People are saying it might be jumping to conclusions that this is even related to Snyder's superhero film team-up, as the Yorkville Patch admits that no one actually knows what movie it is that's being filmed there. But I don't know. It's kind of too big of a coincidence for me. It's probably not anything crucial being filmed since Cavill and Affleck are off doing other movies at this time. But we'll see. I think that's kind of an interesting shift. And that's the news for this week. And let's move into this week's previews for books coming out on November 6th on Wednesday. Of all things, Michael Avon Oeming's Victories number 6 will be out. What perfect timing. After I just got to talk with him about the book, and that'll be a fun book, so be sure to pick that up. And that's from Dark Horse, of course. And from DC Comics, we get Action Comics number 25, part of the Zero Year. Batman Black and White number 3, which I always like. There's a trade paperback of Night of the Owls from Batman, which I also enjoy. Batman Superman number 5. Batwing number 25, also Zero Year. There's apparently a lot of those out this week. Then we get DC Comics Essentials Justice League number 1 for the New 52 for a whole dollar. And also Detective Comics, which is also Zero Year, for $3.99, and that's issue number 25. Earth 2, number 17. Forever Evil, number 3. Green Arrow, 25, which is also tied into Zero Year. How about that? Green Lantern, 25. Justice League of America, hardcover, volume 1, for about $25. That's also New 52. You get The Movement, number 6. We get Stormwatch, 25. Superman Unchained, number 4. Swamp Thing, 25. And Trillium, number 4, which from Mr. Lemire is great stuff. And from DC, finally, Trinity of Sin, the Phantom Stranger, number 13. In the collectibles, there's 4 action figures, Bane, Batman, Black Mask, and Joker, all from the Arkham Origins video game. We get to IDW, we have Doctor Who Prisoners of Time, number 10. We're getting close to the end of that. There's also a Jeff Smith Bone Great Cow Race Artist Edition hardcover. That should be great fun. There's also Star Trek Ongoing Hardcover Volume 1 Red Label Edition. And then we get into Image Comics, where we find East of West number 7, Fatale 18, The Wonderful Ghosted number 5. There's a trade paperback of Invincible Universe for $16.99. And also one for Manhattan Projects Volume 3. And Morning Glories number 34 is out. And we also get a lunchbox for The Walking Dead. Does that come with brains in it? There's also shirts, one One is women's and men, and there's one called Saviors. There's another one called Hilltop, and another one for Kingdom. So you're going to like to wear those, I'm sure. From Marvel Comics, we get Emerald City of Oz, number 4, one of my very favorite things. I always like those, what I call the fringe comics, and that's one of them. Speaking of Oz, there's also the Road to Oz graphic novel trade paperback for $16.99. I like those because I never actually got to read those novels when I was younger, and it's so great to be able to read them in comic format. It's the return of Painkiller Jane in Price of Freedom number 1 by Paul Miatti, and I used to like the TV show. I was one of those who really liked it, and so I'm looking forward to this book coming out. It should be great fun. Mr. Paul Miatti, working with Mr. Grey, whoever he does, he always tells a good story, so I'm looking forward to that. Other comics companies that are putting good things out, there is this 47 Ronin graphic novel. I went to see Ender's Game, and I liked it real well, and I'm just kind of interested that I saw a trailer for the movie, and this graphic novel's $14.95, so that'll be worth getting. There's also an Airboy G8 graphic novel for $9.99. That's not bad at all. I'm looking forward to picking that up. There's also a trade paperback collecting Bionic Man versus the Bionic Woman from Dynamite. And then we get to Garfield number 19 for the kids. I like to read that too. I always enjoyed that strip. There's a Grimm trade paperback volume 1 for $19.99 based on the NBC TV show. Lord of Mars number 4. Mark Waid Green Hornet number 7. Quantum and Woody number 5. A lot of people really like that book from Valiant. That's a good book. We get The Shadow Now, issue number 2. Looking forward to that. I really like the first issue a lot. Lone Ranger 19. And unfortunately, after the holiday, it's too late. I hate when this happens. Steampunk Halloween number 1. That'll be almost a week late, so I'm sorry to see that. But we'll still be in the mood after that, so that'll be fine. Those are the books that'll be out this week. And that's a wrap for this week's episode. Be back next week when there'll be plenty more to talk about in the comics universes. But until then, keep reading your comics.
Over, Joker.
Over? Why, my dear delusional Dark Knight, it hasn't even begun.